Last week, we ended off in Pasuk Yud Gimel 13, page 1252. Everyone has it? Okay, so last week we ended off, we were discussing the wedding party that Ahasuerus was having. He was marrying Vashti, who was the only living heir in the Babylonian royal family. And this wedding was really part of a political coup in order to get the Babylonian people to be loyal to him, the king of Persia. And that was one of the reasons that he was marrying Vashti. Besides for her being one of the beautiful women alive, this was the other reason. So he invites Vashti to come and join his party. And Vashti refuses. Not only does she refuse, but she sends divrei bizyonos, words of embarrassment, to Ahasuerus. And he becomes very upset. Now, he's got a dilemma. On one hand, he was insulted in public. His wife, the queen, insults him. On the other hand, he doesn't want to kill her because that, first of all, she's beautiful. Secondly, like we mentioned, he wanted to marry her in order to get the people of Babylon to be loyal to him. So there's no point in killing her because that'll cause the opposite effect. So he's got a serious dilemma over here. So Pasuk Yud Gimel says, "Vayomer HaMelech LeChachamim Yoydei HaItim." The king turns to the sages who know the times. This is referring to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin, the Jewish court of law, are referred to as the sages who know the time because they used to decide what year would be a leap year. And they used to calculate based on various calculations which year would be the leap year. And that's why they're called Chachamim Yodei HaItim, the sages who know the times. Kichen Dvar HaMelech Lefnei Kol Yodei Das V'Din. Now, even though... Hey, Alex, come on, join us. We have an extra chomesh?
Yeah. Let me grab one if we don't have one out here. I'll get
here.
Sure.
You got a seat over here.
Thank
you. So, Alex, we were discussing, we're holding in page 1252, we were discussing how Ahasuerus is now in his wedding party, and he was marrying Vashti, which was the only living heir in the Babylonian family. And he did that in order to cause the people of Babylon to become loyal to him. He was the king of Persia, and he wanted the people of Babylon to be loyal to him, and that's why he's marrying her, besides for her being very beautiful. So he invites her to come join him, and she refuses, and she embarrasses him in public. So now he's got a serious problem. He doesn't know what to do, so he turns to the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court of law.
Why don't you go to the Sanhedrin?
That's a very good question. Even though Ahasuerus...
Haman gave advice, so was he part of the Sanhedrin?
No, he wasn't. No. We'll see in a minute, why not?
So he's not part of the Sanhedrin, so how does he...
Right. Very good. That's a very good question. We're gonna answer that right now. So he turns to the Sanhedrin, the Jewish court of law, and he asks them what to do. Now, even though Ahasuerus was a major anti-Semite, he hated Jews, still, the Chachamim, the Jewish sages, were the ones who were consulted because he recognized that the Jews were very smart and he was hoping they would be able to help him out in this situation. Now, the sages, realizing that there was no good way to get out of this, because on one hand, Ahasuerus was very angry, he was embarrassed in public, and he wanted to take action. He wanted to punish the queen, the Vashti. On the other hand, they knew that if they advised him to kill her, then the next morning, when he wakes up from his drunken stupor, he will realize that these sages advised him to kill her. He's going to be very upset at them. So there's no good way to get out of this. So if they tell him to kill her, then they're going to be very upset at him. If they don't tell him to kill her, then they're going to say, "Oh, you don't care for my honor," and he's going to be very upset at them right now. And therefore, they tell him, since the Beis Hamikdash, the temple, was destroyed, We don't have that divine wisdom, and therefore you can't consult us. We're very sorry, but we can't help you. That's why the next pasuk, 14, Yudalid, says, "V'akaroy ve'elov, karshanos sheisar ad masar sashish, meres marsanam ha'muchon, shivas asari paras ngodai, re'ep ne'amelech yesh m'rishon ha'malchus." Therefore, in 14, he consults these seven ministers who were the Persian ministers. These were the Persian advisors because the Jewish advisors told him that they can't help him. And that's why he's turning to them in turn to help him out and ask him what to do. Pasuk Tesvav 15, Kadosh Malasei b'malka Vashti. He asked him what to do with the queen Vashti, who did not listen to him when he sent for her to come. In next pasuk, Tezayin 16, Vayomer Memuchan. Memuchan is really Haman. Now Haman was not the most honorable. He wasn't first in line in these seven ministers. In fact, he was the last one in line. He was the least important among them all. But the Talmud tells us that Hedyot Kevetz Barash, someone who's very lowly, jumps ahead, and he comes up with advice for the king. Lifnei HaMelech V'Asarim, he jumps in front of everyone, even though he wasn't as important, in front of the king and the ministers. Le'al HaMelech L'Vadei of Savashti HaMalka, not only to the king himself did Vashti sin, this is going to bring major trouble to all the ministers and all the nations in the kingdom of Ahasuerus. Now, it's very interesting to note that Haman is now giving advice to Ahasuerus based on his personal interest. See, Haman became to power because he was extremely wealthy. He was one of the people who found the hidden treasure that was hidden by Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, many years before. Nebuchadnezzar, before he died, he hid his treasures along the Nahar Pras, along the river of Pras. And there were many treasures that were found by Haman. Now, since Haman became to power, he came from a very, very simple family, but he came to power through this wealth that he found. He ended up marrying a very fancy woman from a very important family. And he had a serious problem in his house. His wife kept on mocking him and telling him, "You know, you're such a simple family, you're nothing, you're a lowlife. All you have is money." And he was very upset about that. And he was basically an opportunist. He comes and he swoops in right over here and he tells Ahasuerus, "Listen, this is not a problem that only you have. Everyone is going to have this problem. Now all the women in all the kingdom are going to come up and say, you know, we are the rulers of the house. We're wearing the pants in the house. And we're going to decide what's going to happen. And therefore, the king Ahasuerus, you should take action over here and not just let it fly." The word of the queen, who set an example for all the women, they will insult and humiliate all the husbands. They're going to take example from Vashti, and they're going to say, just like Vashti refused to come in the name, in the word of Ahasuerus, so too we don't have to listen to our husbands anymore. This day, the women of the ministers in Paras in Persia, this will bring embarrassment to all the ministers in the whole kingdom. In 19, pasuk yutes, aki imal melech toiv yetsa dvar malchus melefanav. Now he's telling him, "I want you to go ahead and kill Vashti."
He didn't say to kill her, just to...
Right, he's right. But the Talmud says that he's not everything we say is mentioned in the Megillah. A lot of it is based on the Talmud and the different commentators. So he says, he's telling Achashverosh, you should go ahead and kill her and find someone else in her place. Now remember, Haman is basing this advice on his own personal interest. Achashverosh has nothing to gain from this. He has only to lose, because as you remember, he wants to find a way of keeping Vashti alive, because first of all, she's beautiful. Secondly, he's trying to establish his monarchy and cause all the people of Babylon to be loyal to him. Now, killing Vashti is going to cause the exact opposite. They're not going to be loyal to him, seeing that he's killing the only living heir of the Babylonian family. So this has nothing in Achashverosh's interest. This is only in Haman's personal interest. And as we'll see in a minute, not only was the advice accepted, but it was received very well. And the Gra notes that this is all part of the hidden miracle that's happening throughout the Megillah. As we mentioned previously, the name Megillas Esther is really a play on the word Hester, which in Hebrew means hidden. Everything that's going on in the story is a hidden miracle, and it doesn't seem so apparent that it's a miracle, but we see here how Hashem, God, is really controlling Achashverosh, and he controls the heart and the reasoning of the Achashverosh and his ministers to accept Haman's advice, even though it's very destructive to Achashverosh's plan.
Do we know why it was in Haman's interest?
Well, like we mentioned, because Haman wanted his wife, who was constantly mocking him, to listen to him. So he had that problem in his house. His wife was mocking him because he came from a very simple family.
You have to get married to find out.
Did he have a daughter that he wanted?
I thought maybe there was some other something else.
Right, no, that was the reason.
Okay.
That was the reason. So, Haman wanted Achashverosh to come out with a decree that all the women have to listen to their husband, the husbands are in charge in the house, and all the women cannot humiliate or embarrass their husbands under any circumstances.
Achashverosh came to power through some kind of, he wasn't from a royal family.
Right, Achashverosh is the same way. We mentioned last week that Achashverosh was one of the people who also found part of Nebuchadnezzar's wealth that he buried. And what he was doing in the wedding party was showing off his wealth. And he came to power through becoming wealthy. And Haman too also came to power through becoming wealthy.
But he asked Vashti to come naked.
Right.
Mekesar Malchus.
Mekesar Malchus, yes.
Just the crown.
Yes, we mentioned that last week, yeah. Where are we?
20.
Chaf. Nishma Piskam Melech Asher Yase B'chom Alchusoi Kirabahi B'chom Noshim Yitnu Yikar V'alem M'godol V'ad Koton. All the women, the king should send out a decree that all the women in the whole kingdom must listen to their husbands, and they have to honor them and respect them. Pasuk Chaf Aleph 21 V'yita V'dor V'beinei HaMelech V'asarim V'yase Melech K'dvar M'muchon. As we mentioned, the advice of Haman is accepted in the eyes of the king and his ministers, and he immediately sent, as we see in 22 in Pasuk Chof Beis, Ve'yishlach Sfarim Biyat Al Kol Medina Samelech. He sends out these chronicles to all the countries in his kingdom, El Medina, Medina Kechsava, every country in their language, Fel Am Ba'am Kiloshayne, every nation in their language, every man will be the ruler and control in his house. So again, as mentioned, this is part of the nace that Hashem is controlling the heart of Achashverosh to listen to Haman. This is all in order for Esther to end up marrying Achashverosh. And as we'll see in the future, she was the one who brought the salvation to the Jewish people. Now, it's interesting to note that this decree, this chronicle that Achashverosh is sending out at this point, is the reason that the Jewish people remained and were not killed. Because later on, when Haman comes to power and convinces Achashverosh to kill the Jewish people, the Achshverosh sends out a decree to kill the Jewish people. Now, Haman made a calculation that the best month to kill the Jewish people is in Adar, the 12th, the last month in the year, according to some opinions. Now, when did he send out the decree? He sent them out 11 months earlier, in Nisan. So, you've got a decree being sent out that in 11 months, anyone is allowed to kill all the Jews. So you've got plenty of anti-Semites among the kingdom who will say, you know what? Why wait? Why wait for another 11 months to go ahead and kill the Jews? Why don't we start now, get a head start? And, you know, obviously, Achashverosh doesn't care for the Jews. He doesn't mind if they're getting killed, so let's go ahead and kill them right now. Why not start now? And yet, no one anti-Semite lifted a sword and killed a Jew. Why was that? This was because this decree, this chronicle that Achashverosh sent out right now. You see, when Achashverosh sent out to all the countries that that every single man should be in control in his house, everyone saw this decree and they said, wait a minute, this is very simple stuff, right? Obviously, every man is in control in his house. Why does he have to send this out and tell everyone that the man is in control? We know that already. So they figured that obviously Achashverosh is not as sophisticated and not as smart as a king should be. And they said, you know what? I don't know what to do. We're very confused. And therefore, when he sends out, a few years later, when he sends out the decree to kill the Jews, they said, I don't know. You know, maybe he's going to change his mind. You never know. This king is not so with it. He's not with the program. And that's why when the decree came out to kill the Jews in 11 months, not one anti-Semite lifted a sword, and no one killed any Jews because they were concerned that he's going to change his mind, which he ended up doing at the end. So this is all part of the hidden nace that we don't see. It's not apparent, but as you get a deeper understanding of what's going on, we see how Hashem is controlling and orchestrating the events that came into play. Okay, let's start the second paragraph. The second paragraph. First pasuk number 1, Aleph. Achar dvarim ba'elik, kashoich chamas ha'melech ha'chashverosh, zohar zvashti ve'eskol asher osaso, ve'es asher nigzar aleo. The next morning, when Achashverosh wakes up from his drunken stupor, he remembers the beauty of Vashti and what was decreed against her, how she was killed. Now Rashi points out that all he remembered was her beauty, meaning the depth of the relationship was zero. He had no relationship whatsoever. He only remembered his beauty. Now, the ministers who realized that now they're in big trouble because they were the ones, Haman at the head, that accepted this advice and told him to kill her, they immediately took over and they did not appear in front of the king. That's why in Pasuk Beis, number 2, Vayomru Namri HaMelech Mesharasav, we have the... What's the translation? Then the king's
pages
said, meaning you have the simple butlers, the ones who get him dressed in the morning, the one who bring him coffee and tea. What happened to all the ministers? They disappeared, and they didn't want to appear in front of the king because they knew that they were going to be in big trouble once the king realizes what they've done, what they've told him to do. So the king's pages tell him, "Yevakshu l'melech na'aras b'sulo is toivis mare." Right? These are simple guys, simple people. What do they say? Oh, you want beauty? Very simple. Why don't you call in a beauty pageant? Call all the beautiful women, virgins among the kingdom. And you can choose a queen from those women. Now, this is part of the miracle that Esther will end up marrying Achashverosh. Because if you think about it, why would a king marry just any simple woman in the kingdom? Remember, in those days, lineage was very important. So, why would Achashverosh go ahead and marry any simple woman from a simple family? He wants to be, like he wanted to marry Vashti, he wanted to marry from royalty. But because this advice was given from the simple butlers that were advising the king, that's why they told him, just marry a simple woman. But if his ministers were there at the time, which they weren't, because they were afraid, they would tell him, listen, why don't you look for royalty, for lineage? But because they weren't there, this is again part of the nace that Esther will end up marrying Achashverosh, like we're going to see. Pasuk Gimel, number 3. V'yafkad ha-melech pekidim b'chol medinus melchusay v'ikbetsu es kol na'arba v'sul toy v'smar al shushan abira al beis ha-noshim al yad hegi sirus ha-melech shemar ha-noshim v'nosan tamrukeim. They give advice to the king, why don't you call on a beauty pageant, send out messengers to all the countries in your kingdom, and bring in all the beautiful women. Bring them to the harem, to Hege, which was in charge of the harem, and he will supply them with all the different fragrances and perfumes that they need. Number 4, V'anara shartitav b'eini ha-melech, timlech tachas vashti. The woman who the king will like will be the queen instead of Vashti. The melech accepts this advice, and that sure enough, that's what he goes ahead and does. Now the pasuk is referring to the next pasuk is referring to Mordechai. Pasuk hey, ish Yehudi haya b'Shushan HaBira. There was a Jewish man living in Shushan HaBira. Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish Ishimini. Mordechai was the son of Yair, the son of Shimi, the son of Kish, who was who came from Shevet Binyamin. We'll see in a minute how he was partially from Shevet Binyamin, partially from the tribe of Yehuda, Judah. Pasuk Vav, number 6. Asher Hagla Yerushalayim. He was exiled from Jerusalem. Imagela Asher Hagla Sa'im Michonio Melech Yehuda. The exile with King Yechonia. This is part of the exile that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, previously, many years before, he was the one who went ahead and exiled them. Now, if you note, it mentions 3 times the word Galus, Hegla. This is referring to the fact that 3 times Mordechai was exiled from Israel, and every time he came back, because that shows his love, that love that Mordechai had to the land of Israel, and every single time he was exiled, he returned back to Israel.
He's not a spring chicken. He's at 70 years already, so
yeah.
He's probably 80 years old anyway.
Yeah, yeah, he was an older man.
Yeah.
In fact, he was the head of the Sanhedrin. He was the head of the Jewish court of law.
Probably older than that. Even.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, doesn't say exactly how old he was, but he was quite old, right? Pasuk Zayin, number 7. Vayhi oymen es Hadasa, he Esther bas Doida. He was taking care. He took into his house Hadasa, which is Esther, his cousin. Ki ein lo avim. She didn't have any father or mother. Vanar yefas toyar v'yitovas mar. She was very beautiful and good looking. At the death of her father and mother, he took her in. Now, it's not clear, it's actually a machlokes, it's a dispute among the sages in the Talmud. Some of them say that he took her as a daughter, some of them say he took her levas, he actually married her. So, according to some opinions, they were actually married. Number ches, pasik ches, number 8. When the word of the king came out, and all the women in the kingdom were taken to the harem, Esther was among those women who were taken to Hegai, who was in charge of the harem. Now the Talmud explains that there's a big difference between King David and Achashverosh. In the days of King David, when he got old, as we learned, Alex, when he got older, he was very cold, and clothes would not warm him up. And this was because many years before, when he was running away from King Saul, who was planning to kill him, at some point, King Saul was running after David. David ran into this cave, and King Saul came looking for him in this cave. He wasn't sure if David was in the cave or not. And it got to a point that David was hiding behind this rock, and King Shaul was right next to him. David decided to show King Shaul HaMelech that he could have in fact killed him if he wanted to, so he cut off part of the cloak of Shaul HaMelech, and later on when they both left the cave, he came to him and showed him, listen, he came to the top of a mountain and showed him, listen, this is the piece of your cloak, of your royal cape. I could have easily killed you. I was so close to you, I had access to kill you. And so I'm trying to prove to you that I have nothing against you. And therefore, there's no reason to try and kill me. That's what David HaMelech was saying. Now, even though it was for a good reason, but because he cut off the cloak of the king, that was showing a certain amount of disrespect to the king. And therefore, many years later, when he got old, he was punished that clothes would not warm him up. Because he cut off the clothes of Shaul HaMelech, when he was old, the clothes would not warm him up. And therefore, they called out, they sent a message to all the people in his kingdom to send a young woman to come and warm him up. Only body heat would warm him up. And all the Jews willingly sent all their daughters to become this special woman for the king. Now, in the complete opposite, when Ahasuerus came out with this message that he's looking for a queen, all the fathers hid their daughters. What was the reason? Because they knew that Ahasuerus was looking for a queen. Now, the way it worked was that the potential queen would come to Ahasuerus. She would spend the night with him. And then the next morning, she would go to the second harem. Now, if Ahasuerus decided to marry her, then she would be queen. If she was not chosen by Ahasuerus, then she would live in the second harem forever. She was never allowed to marry any other man because it was held an embarrassment for the king that a woman that he was with would now marry someone else. And therefore, these women who were not chosen by the king would end up living husbandless until the end of their lives. No father would want that to happen to his daughter. And therefore, all the fathers went ahead and hid their daughters because they didn't want them to be sent to Ahasuerus. Okay, Pasuk test number 9. Vatita Vanaro Ve'enov, the woman found favor in the eyes of Hege, the head of the harem. Vatisa Chesed Lefanov, Ve'eval Es Tamrukel Ve'smanaseo Lo Saslo, Ve'sheva Na'aro Saruya Lo Saslo Mbeis HaMelech, Ve'eshaneo Ve'esnaraseo Lo Toi Besanoshim. Haggai liked Esther very much, and he brought her perfumes, everything she needed, he brought them quickly, as soon as he could. He assigned 7 maids to Esther. Now, unbeknownst to Haggai, all these 7 maids happened to be Jewish. And unbeknownst to Haggai, all the food that he brought to Esther happened to be Jewish. He had no clue she was Jewish. This was all part of Hashem controlling the events and making sure that Esther is taken care of.
Doesn't one of the other Mephoshim say she, I don't know, they weren't Jewish, but everyone just served one day, and they never knew, you know, about Shabbos, so, and she says, you know, when it came Shabbos, you know, she didn't do anything, and the other ones thought that, you know, each one didn't know what the other one was doing, so that they didn't know, you know, how to treat her or whatever, you know.
Right. Yeah, right. Other Mephoshim say that. Yeah.
Whatever.
That's a good point. Now, another thing, unbeknownst to Haggai, he assigned an advisor to Esther, which happened to be, it says that it was Hosach, which is really Daniel, was a prophet. Daniel the prophet. And he was the advisor to Esther, assigned by Haggai. Pasuk Yud, number 10. Lo yigid Esther es ama ves miladato. Esther did not tell anyone where she came from, what her lineage was. Ki Mordechai tziva aleha asher lo yitagid. Mordechai told her not to tell. The reason for that was, Mordechai did not want Ahasuerus, the king, to know that she actually comes from royalty. She goes all the way back to Shaul HaMelech. She came from the house of Shaul HaMelech, who was the king in Israel. And Mordechai was hoping that when Ahasuerus realized that Esther does not want to tell where she came from, he would assume that Esther comes from dubious lineage, and therefore he will not marry her. He was doing everything in his power to make sure that Achshverosh would not marry Esther. And still, we see that in the next pasuk, pasuk Yud Aleph, number 11, V'chol yoyim v'yoyim, Mordechai mishalech v'nei chatzar beis anashim, v'da'as ha'shloim Esther v'maya osebo. Every day he was walking in front of the king's throne to find out what's going to happen to Esther. The Talmud says that Mordechai was one of two people who got a remez of Yeshua, a hint, a message of salvation. One of those people was David HaMelech, King David. Before he became king, he was a shepherd. And while he was a shepherd, he was out in the desert. And while he was watching the sheep, this mountain lion comes and attacks the sheep. And David HaMelech goes ahead, single-handed, empty-handed, no one helping him. He goes ahead and kills this mountain lion. All by himself, with no weapons or anything. After that, when he faces Goliath, when the Jews are going to go to war with the Plishtim, and Goliath comes out and challenges all the Jews to come and fight him, David HaMelech realizes that when Hashem sent that mountain lion and he was able to kill him, this must be a message that he will be the one to go ahead and save the Jewish people. And that gave him the courage to stand up against Goliath and eventually kill him. The second one we received a remez of Yeshua, a hint, a message of salvation, is Mordechai, right over here. Mordechai realized that if Esther is taken to the king, must be that if a Jewish woman is taken, must be Hashem is wanting this to happen, and this is a way for him bringing the salvation to the Jewish nation. And therefore, he is going ahead, and he wants to make sure and see what's going to happen. Hoping, kind of expecting that she's going to end up marrying the king, because this can be the only explanation why a Jewish girl would be taken to marry a non-Jew. Now, it seems a bit of a contradiction, because Mordechai, on one hand, is doing everything in his power that Esther will not end up marrying Achashverosh, and then, on the other hand, he's going to find out every day to see if she ends up marrying him, expecting her to marry Achashverosh, and that will bring a salvation. So what's going on over here? Does he want her to marry her, Achashverosh, or does he not? So the Rosh Yeshiva of Chofetz Chaim explains that there's two systems. There's Hashem's system, and there's our job. Our job is to follow Shulchan Aruch. Our job is to follow the rules, the halacha of the Jewish law. And the Jewish law tells us that a Jewish girl should not marry a non-Jew. Therefore, I have to do everything in my power to go ahead and make sure that will not happen. That doesn't mean that Hashem, in the big picture, if Hashem controls the events, he has something else in mind. Now, I know that might happen, but still, I have to do everything in my power to make sure that I follow the rules, the laws of the halacha. Pasuk Beis, number 12. V'agia tor nara v'nara, when every woman would come to the king, lo ve'ol ha-melech ha-shirish, mikei tzeyas lo kadas ha-noshim, shnei masar chodesh, kikhen im lo yimei merukeim, shish chadoshim b'shem ha-marv, shish chadoshim ha-basalim, v'tamruki ha-noshim. Every woman would spend 6 months in these different oils, and another 6 months in with these fragrances and perfumes. Now, one of the reasons was because they wanted to find out, since Achashverosh would be intimate with each one of these women, there was the concern that there was some kind of illness or sickness that these women have. And being that they would spend 12 months in the harem, they were hoping that any illness or sickness would surface, and that way they would know that this woman is sick and she would not end up being with the king. So every woman who was with the king, she was given whatever she wanted. If she was singing, she would give in like various accompaniment, musical accompaniment to find favor in the king's eyes, and every woman got whatever she wanted that would help her find favor in the king's eyes. Pasuk Gimel, number 13. With ze anara bar la melech, and with this, the every woman would come to the king. Es kol asher toymar inos en la, everything she would ask for would be given to her, like we mentioned. Lo ba'ima min beis anoshim ad beis ha-melech. It was given to her from the harem all the way to the house of the king. Pasuk Yudal, number 14. She would come in the evening. Once she spent the night with the king, she was sent to the second harem, where she basically lived until she died. And she would not be called again unless the king called her by name. Pasuk Desvav, number 15. When the turn of Esther came, that Mordechai took as a daughter, she didn't ask for anything. Esther found favor in the eyes of anyone who saw her. Now, Esther was really supposed to be killed many times over. First of all, she would not tell anyone what her lineage was, where she came from, what nation she's from. And again, she refused to ask for anything when she was in the harem. The only thing that she got was whatever Haggai, the head of the harem, would ask for. This was again part of the nace, part of the miracle that that reoccurs throughout the Megillah, that she was not killed, even though she should have been killed many times over, because she didn't tell anyone where she came from, and she didn't ask for anything. She didn't try to do anything to find favor in the eyes of the king. But yet, since this is part of the reason that Hashem made sure that she found favor in everybody's eyes. Pasuk Tezayin, number 16. ותלוקח אסתר אל המלך אחשוורוש אל בית מלכוסי בחודש העשירי וחודש טבת בשנת שבע למלכוסי. So Rashi notes that she was taken in the middle of the winter, when it's freezing cold outside, like it is right now. And this is because when the weather is very cold, a man and woman who have an intimate relationship enjoy it much more, because the body heat is much more enjoyed. This is in the seventh year of the Malchus, the rulership of Achashverosh. Pasuk Yud Zayin, number 17. V'yehav HaMelech es Esther mikol anoshim. She found favor. He loved Esther more than all the other women. V'tisachen v'chesed lefanav mikol abesulis. She found favor in his eyes from all the virgins. V'yosem keser Malchus b'roisha v'yemlicha atachas vashti. Now, the Gro explains, he notes that if you realize, first it says that Achshverosh loved her, and then it says afterwards that she found favor in his eyes. That's the opposite of the natural way of events. Usually, first a woman finds favor in a man's eyes, and then he falls in love with her. Over here it happened the opposite. The Kohen tell us that the love that Achshverosh had to Esther was supernatural. It was totally beyond any love that any man would have to a woman, because we wanted to make sure Hashem made sure that he would end up loving Esther, and he completely stopped the beauty pageant at that point, and he appointed Esther to be the queen. Now again, it doesn't make sense, because, you know, at least, you know, you have all these hundreds, maybe thousands of women waiting for you. Why don't you can keep Esther on the side, remember her, and why don't you try out all the other women and see, maybe there's someone better. But no, this is again part of the nace that Achashverosh decided right there and then that she would be the queen. Number 18, he made a huge party to all of his ministers. It's Mishta Esther, the party of Esther. He gave tax reduction to all the nations around, because what he wanted to do over here was he wanted Esther to tell him where she came from. He's basically sending her a message. Listen, if you tell me where you come from, I'm going to give a major tax reduction to the country, the nation where you're from. And it's beneficial for you to tell me where you're from. But again, Esther refuses to tell him. Pasuk Yud Tes, 19. Ubikovas Basul Shemis, the second beauty pageant, Mordechai Yeshev v'Shar HaMelech. Mordechai is sitting in right next to the throne of the king. Now this pasuk does not make any sense. He just found the queen. He loves her. He decided to stop the beauty pageant. He throws a party, and then it says that he's gathering another beauty pageant. What's the point? And why does it mention Mordechai over here? What does that have to do with anything? So the commentators explain that Achashverosh again consults Mordechai because he was considered to be the most wise advisor of the king, even though he was Jewish. He tells him how he turns to Mordechai and asks him, "How do I get Esther to tell me where she comes from, what her lineage is?" And Mordechai, again trying to avoid Esther marrying Achashverosh, says, "I have advice for you. If you want her to tell you where she's from, you should go ahead and make her jealous. Gather a second beauty pageant and make believe that you're looking for someone else. You're not so into Esther. Maybe you're going to find someone else. And once she gets jealous, then she's going to tell you." Now Mordechai was hoping that once Achashverosh starts looking for another wife, when he gathers the second beauty pageant, he will in fact find someone that he likes more than Esther, and not end up marrying Esther. But, again, that didn't work, because he loved Esther much more. And, again, this is part of Mordechai's plan, hoping that Esther will not be married to Achashverosh.
Wasn't it supposed to be the second time was with married women?
Yeah, I never heard that.
I saw that.
Could be.
One of Mephoroshim.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
All young girls now get married women even.
Could be.
I could be wrong, but I
didn't see that, but that could be. Right, so again, Pasuk Chaf, number 20. Ein Esther Magenes Miladato V'Esama. She does not tell anyone. She still refuses, even though Achashverosh is, so to speak, making her jealous. She still refuses to tell him where she comes from. She refuses again to tell Achashverosh where she comes from, like Mordechai ordered her to do. Chaf Aleph, number 21. Mordechai Yeshu b'Shar HaMelech, Kotzaf Bikson v'Serah Shnei Sarisi HaMelech M'Shar Me'Asaf, V'Yavakshu Lishloach Yad B'Melech Achashverosh. In those days, Mordechai was sitting at the gate of the king, and Bigson Vaserash, the two night guards of Achashverosh, decide to assassinate Achashverosh. The reason for that was, since Achashverosh fell in love with Esther, he was with her every single night, and he was constantly harassing Bigson Vaserash, asking them to bring water and other various requests. And Bigson v'Serash were now disturbed from their usual nightly shift, which used to be very calm and very relaxed, was now very, very much disturbed. And therefore, they decided to assassinate Achashverosh. Now, what they did was, they were plotting to kill Achashverosh, but they knew that someone might hear them. Therefore, they spoke Lashon Terusi, which was a language that was not common at the time. No one knew that language. And they figured that they were the only ones who knew the language. The only problem was that Mordechai, who was sitting at the gate of the king, right next to them, he was, as we mentioned, the head of the Sanhedrin. He was the head of the Jewish court of law. Now, one of the requirements for a judge sitting on the court of law was to know 70 languages. The reason for that is, since one of the things that a judge has to do is interrogate witnesses. Now, the law is that you cannot have any translator translate what the witnesses say, because we're afraid that the subtleties will be lost in translation, and therefore the judge has to hear the witness directly without anyone in between. And therefore, he has to know 70 languages, because witnesses can come from all over the world. from any language. And therefore, Mordechai was actually familiar with this sort of kind of secret language that these two guards were using, and he was aware of exactly what they were planning to do. So he goes over to Esther and tells her what these two guards are going to do. Number 22, Pasuk Chav Beis, Vayvada Adar Vela Mordechai. The matter was revealed to Mordechai. Vayagid LeEsther Amalka. He tells Esther, V'toymer Esther Amalka, V'toymer Esther LaMelech B'Shem Mordechai. She goes ahead and tells the king in the name of Mordechai. Now, the Talmud tells us that anyone who tells, who mentions something in the name of the person who said it, brings salvation to the world. Maybe Gula L'Olam. This is referring to this case where Esther tells Achashverosh in the name of Mordechai, she tells him, listen, Mordechai told me, it's not I who came up with this. And what happens is, Pasuk Chav Gimel, number 23, we're going to end with this. The matter is investigated and found out. What they did was they tested the food that Bigson Vesarish brought to Achashverosh, and they brought a dog to actually taste from the food, from the drink that they would bring to him, and the dog sure enough died because they put poison in the food. And then Achashverosh realized that Mordechai was telling the truth, and he wrote this down in the chronicles of the king. Now, the way it worked was he would tell the scribe to come and what to write down, and the scribe would go ahead, you know, and in his office and write down slowly exactly what happened. But it happened to be that the scribe at the time was the son of Haman. Now, Haman obviously didn't want Mordechai to be held in high esteem in the eyes of the king, so he would not write this. However, this is, again, part of the miracle that this instant, this moment, this was the only time that Achashverosh actually asked the scribe, which was Shimshi, the son of Haman, to write it in front of him. I want you to write it right here, right in front of me, what Mordechai did and saved the life of the king. So, we'll see later on, since this was written in the Chronicles, that's what ended up saving the Jewish people. And this is, again, part of the miracle that Hashem controlling the events. Okay, we're going to stop over here.
Sure. Can I have a question?
Sure.
You mentioned that Mordechai...